From the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, February 2nd, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. And of course, today is Hawaiian Shirt Friday. Let's do the Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and proud. Truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You've got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or Naga nuggets. You get to make the call. It says, enjoy the little things. For one day, you may look back and realize they were the big things. Yeah, I recall my little things grew up to become big things. It's those little things I keep stepping on in the middle of the night, though, that keep me awake. Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast, shall we?
Twisted history.
I'm moving.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, for sure.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
Well, alrighty then.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah. I can see that happening. Not. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1913, Grand Central Terminal opened in New York City. Beautiful work of architecture. Man, I just don't like starting a trip from a place called Terminal. You know what I mean? Kind of creeps me out. And it was on this day in 1954, the Detroit Red Wings played in their first outdoor hockey game by any NHL team in an exhibition against the Marquette Branch Prison Pirates in Marquette, Michigan. And they never did that again because it was just too darn cold.
Get used to disappointment.
As we slowly wind our way through the year 2024, an election year, things are starting to get a little more intense, and they will the closer we get to November. Looks like RFK Jr. is also running for president as an independent, or is he going to go with the Libertarian Party? I'm not sure yet. Anyhow, he posted something on social media the other day. He said, Joe Biden is campaigning in South Carolina right now. Tomorrow is the first day of Black History Month. Of course, that was a reference to yesterday, so this was posted on Wednesday. He said, let's reminisce on everything he's done for Black Americans. Authored the 1994 crime bill, which led to the mass incarceration of Black people. Said, if you don't vote for him, then you ain't Black. Extended penalties for people under 21 charged with selling marijuana. Endorsed segregationist senators. Opposed busing because he didn't want his kids to grow up in a racial jungle. Well, there you go. RFK Jr. highlighting a series of actions and positions attributed to Joe Biden. They're all a matter of record. And it sparked intense discussions about the president's past record on race-related issues. Now, even if you're a casual follower of politics, you already know about Joe Biden's track record on race, and it's not good. Not good at all. He's said a lot of tacky things during his career, things which, had he been a Republican, he would have been roundly excoriated for. But since he's a Democrat, he's always gotten the free pass. So this tweet brought to the forefront Biden's role in the 1994 crime bill. Also his controversial comments on voting choices, his stance on drug offense penalties, that sort of thing. Let's get into the 1994 crime bill. All right, that bill, formerly known as the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act, has been a point of contention in discussions about systemic racism and its impact on the Black community. So RFK Jr.'s tweet suggests that this legislation, which Biden played a key role in authoring, contributed significantly to the mass incarceration of Black Americans. Now, the bill included the three strikes rule. You remember that? That was also a hallmark of the Clinton administration. But it included other stringent measures that led to increased prison sentences for a good many offenders. And critics argue that these policies disproportionately affected Black individuals, exacerbating racial disparities in the criminal justice system. Now, the argument can also be made that, well, it was blacks who committed the majority of the crimes. There are stats that back that up. But there were social issues, I think, that brought that along. You know, one of the worst things this country ever did was the Great Society under LBJ. That man did more to destroy the black community in this country than any other individual. And so many of those practices are still in place. So the conversation around the 1994 crime bill remains a critical part of the broader dialogue on reforming criminal justice to address its impact on minority communities. Another thing is that statement that Biden made, and you still hear the sound clip played back every so often, particularly on conservative radio, where he said, "If you don't vote for me, you ain't black." Well, that comment was during a radio interview in which he said, "If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black." And that did bring a lot of criticism. And RFK Jr.'s mention of this remark in this particular tweet from Wednesday underscores the controversy that it stirred. The statement was perceived by quite a lot of people as a presumptive and dismissive assessment of black Americans' political agency, raising some real concerns about racial insensitivity and the complexities of voter allegiance within the black community. You still have so many, the majority of black people in this country still vote Democrat because when they were kids, they were told to. Now, in the end, Biden apologized for this comment, acknowledging that it was a mistake to take the black vote for granted. And particularly these days, when we have an economy that really, truly sucks the way this economy of ours today does, who do you think it impacts first? The poor. Now, in all honesty, it affects poor whites as well as it does poor blacks. But in situations like this, traditionally, it's the black community that gets hit the hardest, because a larger percentage of their population is poor. Biden also faced criticism for past legislative actions, like the extension of penalties for people under 21 charged with selling marijuana. And RFK Jr. points to this as a policy that's been scrutinized for its role in the broader issue of criminal justice reform, especially concerning its impact on younger individuals within the black community. And critics argue that measures like this have contributed to long-term legal and social consequences for a generation, affecting their opportunities and exacerbating the cycle of criminalization among youth, particularly in minority communities. Then you can also look into Biden's past regarding his senatorial buddies, his political relationships, particularly his past endorsements of segregationist senators like James Eastland and Herman Talmadge. You remember him? Oh, you'd have to be a baby boomer to remember Talmadge. But these relationships have been brought to light by RFK Jr., and these endorsements, which they were, Biden handily endorsed these people, and they've raised questions, these endorsements, about Biden's commitment to racial justice and equality. The scrutiny of these endorsements is a part of a larger conversation about the evolving political views and alliances within American politics, and how these historical associations are viewed through the lens of current social values. Then there's the no busing Biden. You remember this? Wow. This is one that really makes you shake your head. His past opposition to busing initiatives. Now, they weren't very popular when they were first introduced, these initiatives, but if you're going to be honest, you'd realize that they were crucial for school desegregation. And RFK Jr.'s tweet highlights this stance with a quote where Biden expressed his concern about his kids growing up in a racial jungle. That was a term that he used. And of course, these days, it's being widely condemned for its insensitive implications. I mean, you can't get any more insensitive than that. And again, he's a Democrat. He got a free pass on this one. But he's not getting a free pass today because of this. So this past of his is coming up here into the present to haunt him. And this comment reflects an historical resistance to integration efforts that were designed to dismantle the pervasive segregation of the time. It was pervasive. The white community was afraid of it. I remember when I was a kid, there was talk about, well, we're going to go get our guns. If we're going to see all these black people marching down our street and infiltrating our schools. And this was conversation I was hearing in Ohio, where I grew up. So Biden's position on busing is viewed by critics as a pretty blatant example of resistance to the progress of civil rights and racial equality. Naturally, illustrating controversial patterns of racial prejudice during his career. Has he changed his stance on it? No, I believe he's doing what the late governor of Alabama, George Wallace, admitted to. Dick Cavett was interviewing George Wallace one time. This was back in the early 70s. And Cavett asked him, he said, do you hate black people? He said, no, I don't. He said, we had black families living right out behind our house. I grew up with these, with black kids. He said, I was doing what was politically expedient. And that was an answer to the incident where he stood in the doorway, the front doorway of the University of Alabama to block blacks from entering. And he said, I was doing what was politically expedient. But you see, that's no excuse. So these revelations put forth by RFK Jr. regarding Joe Biden's past have ignited a reexamination of the president's positions on critical race issues. And if Donald Trump is smart, he'll pick this ball up and run with it. Because the nation right now, this month, is going to be reflecting on its leaders' roles in shaping policy and societal norms. And this scrutiny underscores the importance of accountability and the evolving understanding of racial justice. Now, the claims made by RFK Jr. certainly challenge us to confront the clear pattern of prejudice in Joe Biden's political career. We're not talking about other people. We're talking about Joe Biden here, a man who at this moment still intends to run for re-election. And we need to demand continuous progress toward equality, not equity. Equality. In other words, equality of opportunity, equality of consideration for jobs. Equity should be stricken from the vocabulary, at least the political vocabulary, because equity means equal outcomes. That's communism. So, during the month of February, regardless of how you feel personally about how racial issues have been handled historically in this country, during the month of February, we just need to resolve to be a kinder, gentler, more inclusive population. Do we lower our standards to do this? Well, we have in the past, yes, and look where it's gotten us. And I think it is probably pretty insulting to people of color when they realize that we've been dumbing down the nation with the idea in mind that maybe we'll just get them to sit down and shut up and stop complaining. That's not how you fix issues. If you really want to fix this issue, you must first admit that we were wrong with our racial policy historically in this country. We were wrong. We were just wrong. You know where you want to go to find a microcosm of where we need to be as a society? The military. Go visit. Of course, I don't know that you can. Ever since 9/11, they've closed the bases to visitors. But what is an interesting environment for equal opportunity? Oh, boy. it doesn't get any better than military basic training. You usually get a cluster. In the Air Force, we would call it a flight of 50 recruits. You all get the same haircut. They shave your head. You get the same clothes. And you all are ordered to do the same thing. Doesn't matter if you're from Beverly Hills, California, or if you're from Watts. You are all treated the same. The idea in mind is to tear you down to absolute nothing. And then, at the end of your training period, I think in the Air Force it's 8 weeks, in the Marine Corps it's 11 weeks. I don't know what it is in the Army, probably similar to the Marine Corps. I don't know what it is in the Navy. But at the end of that basic training period, you are then invited to rebuild yourself. It's an amazing experience. Boy, I like to imagine what it would be like if we would do that in our public school systems. I think this is rather funny how when you sit at home and you watch the mainstream media, which I do once in a while, not very often because I find them just really aggravating, but when you watch the mainstream media, they're trying to prop up Joe Biden and they have nothing to stand on, absolutely nothing to stand on. I mean, the man is senile. He can't even stand on his own 2 feet. He's purportedly the leader of the free world. The economy sucks. John and Jane Q. Citizen all across America are suffering right now. Our debt, our national debt, of course, is far higher than it's ever been. Set amazing records. Where are we now? $34 trillion? $35 trillion? It'll be $37 trillion before we finally get rid of this idiot president. And doesn't seem to matter much anymore what your ethnicity is. Americans are all suffering to a pretty much equal degree. Personal debt, credit card debt, new records. Inflation is not going down. Interest rates are not going down. Well, inflation, I've got to take that back. Inflation has gone down a little bit. The rate of inflation has gone down. But you only need to go to a grocery store. And it now costs me $50 to buy what $30 used to buy me 3 years ago. Not a good thing. And the establishment's attacks on Donald Trump are crashing and burning. I mean, just to watch the media trying to prop up Biden is laughable. Now, according to a new poll, Donald Trump is leading Biden in all 7 swing states, key swing states. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Georgia, Michigan, and North Carolina. In Wisconsin, he's ahead of Biden by 5 points. Pennsylvania, 3 points. Nevada, 8 points. Georgia, 8 points. Who would have thought, right? Georgia? Wow. Trump ahead by 8 points. Michigan, ahead by 5 points. And North Carolina, ahead by 10 points. Wow. I don't know about you, but I'd call that scorched earth. And in Arizona, ahead by 3 points. So not only is he up in all 7 swing states, he's up by some big numbers in some of those states. And Trump is up by 8 in Nevada, 10 in North Carolina, as I just mentioned. And boy, the Michigan numbers are what really surprised me. Now, the UAW, as I mentioned the other day, the UAW president endorsed Biden. Stupid move. Stupid move. Because the rank and file within the UAW are solidly behind Donald Trump. And now it looks like Donald Trump is going to carry the endorsement of the Teamsters. So when you look at the polling, they have Biden down 6 points, 48% to 42%, and that's consistent with other polls. They also prefer Trump 51% to 33% on the economy, which is still the single most important issue. Now, the other day there was a story about how finally Americans are viewing the border as the single greatest problem facing the country. And I think that may be pretty accurate, but right close on the heels of that issue is the economy. Nobody in America gets away from the economy. Even the wealthy, they're concerned about the economy. Because the wealthy can't be wealthy without people like you and me. I don't think there's anybody on Capitol Hill who is smarter than Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana. You know him. To me, he is the quintessential Southern gentleman, a real gentleman. But the man is intensely smart. Not just well-educated, which he is, very well-educated, but he is just incredibly smart. And that is never more apparent than when he's answering a reporter's questions. And he spoke with several reporters on the growing chaos in the Middle East. You've got Iranian-backed factions that have launched 166 attacks on U.S. forces in the Middle East since September. I don't know about you, but that sounds like a war to me. Isn't Iran trying to pick a fight with us? Now, under this administration, it's happening because Iran knows they can do it. They know that Joe Biden isn't going to do anything about it. But Iran's time is running out. Because come November, the Democrats are not going to win. The American people are tired of everything. They're tired of the lousy economy. They're tired of the lousy foreign policy. They're tired of this senile president. They're tired of the BS coming out of the Democrat Party. They're tired of it all. And right now, the American people are angry. The American people work harder and harder to be able to buy less and less. They're having a tougher time supporting their families. And then you've got all these little bullies around the world kicking us in the slats, trying to provoke us into something. Well, you know, maybe we need to deliver. Now, I'm not a hawk. I'm like Tucker Carlson. These needless wars, they got to stop. And Donald Trump had us there. He had us there. And as we sit around and we sit on our pants and holler and bitch about Joe Biden being such a lousy president, which he is, well, aren't we the ones who put him in the White House? There was so much Trump hatred. And yes, that was a fraudulent election. But I think we facilitated that as well. It's a damn shame. And you can blame the 2020 election on anybody you want. And I guarantee you this, you will be able easily to find a group of people who are willing to listen to you bitch about what happened in 2020, and they will agree with you, they will applaud you, and while that feels good, that doesn't negate the fact that we, the voters, are the ones who allowed that to happen. Because I think in the end, the turnout for Donald Trump still wasn't great enough. Well, it's going to be a different story come this November. A whole new ballgame. And the American people right now are at the point where we are sick and tired of being crapped on by the rest of the world. Putin's not the problem that Xi Jinping is. It's about time to kick his ass. We're sick and tired of the Ayatollah in Iran. My God. So the other day, we had a reporter stop John Kennedy in the hallway as he was on his way from one office to another. He apparently was on his way to another hearing or something. Here's how that went.
Switching gears quickly to Iran, President Biden said that he has decided how to respond to those attacks that left three Americans dead. I'm wondering, how do you think that the administration should be responding?
President Biden needs to grow a pair of oranges and open Iran up like a soft peanut. Now, our military has been attacked 150 times. We've only responded a couple times. We're in a bar fight. President Biden needs to stop quoting Socrates and reading Beowulf to the Ayatollah. These are hard men, and they want to kill Americans, and they want to kill Jews, and they want to drink our blood out of a boot. And we have to respond accordingly.
You see, my friend, that is what it sounds like when you have a really solidly grounded individual on Capitol Hill who truly can speak for the American people. Finally, one of Fox News' top hosts appeared stunned when a network reporter informed her that President Joe Biden had not yet contacted the families of the three American service members who were killed earlier this week in Syria. Back on Saturday night, a one-way attack drone crashed into the Jordanian base, and it resulted in the deaths of three service members and injuries to 25 others. Now, the White House attributed the attack to Iran-backed militant groups operating in Syria and Iraq, marking a pretty important escalation in the Middle East. It's like I said a little earlier, Iran is itching for a fight. And according to Fox News White House correspondent Jackie Heinrich, Biden has not yet reached out to the families of Sergeant William Rivers, Specialist Kennedy Sanders, and Specialist Brianna Moffitt. And that appeared to shock the host, who was none other than Harris Faulkner. And Heinrich told Faulkner, this was back on Tuesday, said, also Harris, watching for news that the president has contacted the families of these fallen soldiers or that he plans to attend their dignified transfer at Dover, neither of those questions did the White House have any answers to yesterday. Again, that's on Tuesday. Now, Faulkner said it's been 3 days. And all Heinrich had to say to him was, yeah. And then Faulkner said, that's a lot. Well, we'll thank them. We'll thank those families and those patriots we've lost and all those men and women in harm's way in the Middle East. We'll say thank you and tell them that we love them. What do you say we hit the comedy corner with Clint Hall?
But you know what's really interesting about processing government documents all day, every day? Nothing. So last month, for the first time in 30 years, I have actually applied for a new job.
Woo!
Woo! Woo! And that process has changed. I went into the interview, and they're like, so is your resume on PDF or is it on Word? And I was like, paper? It's on paper. That's Times New Roman. They wanted a copy of my college transcript, which I hadn't seen since college. I haven't even seen my diploma since we finally got a coffee table that was already level. So I had to go online, try and get a copy of my college transcript. I got to answer these security questions to make sure I am who I say I am. Like, which of the following classes were you enrolled in 1991? I don't even remember what I had for breakfast, let alone what class I was skipping 30 years ago. And the questions they ask at the interview. So, Clint, what's your biggest weakness? Bench press? Not so good at bench press. Now, the new job application was not the first time I had tried to find something else to do. As for a period of time, I was also a professional wrestler. I'm not to the joke part yet. But thanks for that confidence boost. Appreciate that. That was a real, true, poor life decision that I made all on my own. People have difficulty believing that for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is that a lot of people think pro wrestling is like WWE or nothing, you know. But like any other form of entertainment, there are different levels. All the way from the guys in the WWE that wrestle at Madison Square Garden all the way down to the guys like me that wrestled in the barn behind Tom's Lawn and Garden. And I tried to look the part, you know, I had the long hair and the spandex tights, and I cut the hair, but I still have the tights, because sometimes I just want to feel pretty.
That's it. Make it a great weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?